French cats doing French things on a French boat. This is La Talente. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Jackie.
What are you doing here?
It's almost like I'm here just to do an episode of Seen and Heard with you.
I'm in. Let's do it.
Welcome to Seen and Heard. This is the podcast where two entertainment assistants go through the sight and sound top 100 greatest films of all time list. If you are joining for the first time, we do a ping pong fashion. So we start at the top of the list and our next film is from the bottom. And we go back and forth, working our way towards the center. This week, is it number 11 or number 12?
12.
It's number 12. Mm-hmm. Jean Vigo's La Talente.
Beautiful.
Right? How's that pronunciation?
Great. Perfect.
Unfortunately, you know, I feel like we should mention this. Just found out like a couple hours ago that Ray Liotta just passed. Legendary actor Ray Liotta.
Yes.
Age 67. He was shooting a film in the Dominican Republic and passed away in his sleep. So, yeah, it's a big loss. Ray Liotta, you know, he's known for Goodfellas, rightfully so, but he is so versatile beyond just that film and made a lot of great films and had a lot of kind of like interesting performances and not just the mafia type, mafioso type guy.
Yeah, it really is a shock. I mean, he was fairly young. And
yeah, it's young. I wonder what happened. I don't know. If you have not seen, one of my favorite Ray Liotta movies is the Jonathan Demme movie, Something Wild. If you haven't, have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's great. It's kind of a French New Wave inspired movie with Jeff Daniels and Melanie Griffith and Ray Liotta. Really great movie.
Love all those people.
I think you'd really like it.
How did you like Ray Liotta in Marriage Story?
Oh my God. I forgot that he was in it.
Right?
You know, he's really good in that.
I think he's great too. He's so scary.
Yeah. Because he's one of the attorneys.
He's, yeah, the husband's attorney.
Laura Dern, right? Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good move. I need to go back to that.
Yeah, it's good.
I only saw it once.
Before we get into this week's movie, what else have you been watching?
So with a couple of my friends from the film club, we did sort of a double feature at the American Cinematheque at the Los Feliz 3 Theater. They were showing two Gaspar Noé movies, his two newest movies. One of which is Lux Aeterna, which is a couple years old now at this point, but it's just now coming to the States. I don't know why we have to wait so long for this stuff. So we saw Lux Aeterna, which was great and overpowering. I don't know if you know much about the movie, but the whole sort of last 20 minutes of this movie is just like a strobe light effect.
Oh my gosh.
So this is, I've actually, my first Gaspar Noé movie was in 2018 when Climax came out. 2018, 2019. And I was completely blown away by it. And since then have kind of become like a bigger and bigger fan of his, even though on paper he should annoy me because he's a provocateur. Like a lot of his movies exist just to be provocative and to assault the audience.
Yeah.
But he does it in a, first of all, he's very cine literate and not really like in an like annoying way, but he knows his stuff. And I feel like there's genuine heart and a soul to a lot of his films that lets him, it's like an excuse for him to assault the audience. And sometimes I want to be assaulted. And this sounds really jaded, but it's true. Like horror movies don't really work on me anymore. So when I sit, down to like see a new Gaspar Noé movie, especially in the theater, I'm like a little scared.
Yeah.
And I love that feeling. It's like going on a roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Lux Aeterna, really good. Really. I liked it a lot. And then, we saw, his newest film Vortex, which he actually shot during the pandemic, that I loved. And that I think is a near masterpiece. Story. It kind of sounds like Amore, even though I haven't seen Amore yet. It's a story of an elderly couple just kind of deteriorating over time. So it stars Francois Lebrun and Dario Argento. And I love this about it because Dario Argento is, I love his films. His films aren't incredibly deep. There are a lot of style over substance, but Jesus, like what style like that? I love Argento's films. Love. But he's known for horror and you know, giallo movies. Like, he's not this like nuanced human director. So to see him in Vortex, which is his basically first acting role, his first like lead role.
Yeah.
And he's in his 80s.
That's crazy.
This is like an 80-year-old man stepping in front of the camera almost for the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd done some very small stuff before, but he half carries this film with Francois, and it's beautiful. And what I love about it, first of all, the movie is great, and the movie doesn't pull any tricks in terms of like assaulting you. Like, there's no strobing in this movie. Like, he doesn't employ any of his usual tricks, but it is a very human, patient, observed film. And it's done in like split screen. One screen is dedicated to him. The other screen is dedicated to her. Basically the whole movie.
Wow.
And it happens mostly in real time. So like, he'll be at his typewriter because he's writing a book on film and dreams. Mm. So he's like at his typewriter. And then on the other screen, his wife goes around the corner to the supermarket. So you'll just see him on his typewriter, her going to the store. Mm-hmm. And so it's this great pairing, the way that it sounds like a gimmick, and it should be a gimmick, but it works so well. Mm. I loved Vortex. Holy shit. Basically a masterpiece. I haven't seen a movie that good in a while. I think I even liked it more than Memoria, which I also loved, but highly recommend Vortex. What's so cool about it too is it recontextualizes Argento's career, because he's so, you know, he, you know, has not directed a great film in like 30 years. Everyone kind of knows he dropped off like in the 90s and hasn't really come back from that. But what's cool about it is that he steps in front of the camera and gives this really human, naked performance. And it just completely reframes his whole career. And I love that. This movie reframes Gaspar Noé's career, and it reframes Argento's career. And it's a beautiful thing. Gaspar Noé made the movie because he almost died of like a brain hemorrhage.
Oh my gosh.
And so he had this like near-death experience. Mm-hmm. And then that's where Vortex came from. Holy shit. There's just something about dangerous cinema, which Gaspar Noé is associated with, you know, the French extremist cinema. But what was so cool about this was it was him, you know, everyone, because he's like in his mid-50s or something, and as people age, they kind of rein it in, and he's, I wouldn't say he's losing his edge, but I think his movies are getting more interesting. He has more to say. His movies are getting deeper and richer, and I think Gaspar Noé is just becoming a better and better filmmaker. So
you heard it here first.
I love both films, especially Vortex. I thought was incredible, just absolutely incredible. And then very quickly, I did see a film following my extremist streak. I saw Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer for the first time, which I'd kind of been avoiding for a long time because I didn't want to be subjected to such a feel bad movie. I was actually surprised how nuanced it was. I don't know why lately I've just been wanting to watch like really fucked up movies. I was surprised how nuanced it was and patient and observed. And you don't really see most of the murders. They happen off camera. And the only ones they show, like, you needed to see. I think if you didn't see any of them, it would be a mistake, because you have to feel the horror of some of the stuff. Otherwise, mm-hmm. why are you making a film about a serial killer? Like, it'd feel dishonest.
Yeah.
So it's not reveling in it, but it's showing you a couple very select, very disturbing murders. But a very interesting, fascinating character study. I'm really glad I finally saw it. So, anyway.
I think it's time for you to watch Amour.
Yeah, honestly, I was going to try to watch it before this episode so that I could compare the Gaspar Noé Vortex specifically to it, but I ran out of time. But that's okay. I'm going to watch it.
That's okay.
I'm going to watch it. How about you?
I haven't been watching that much, honestly. I saw There Will Be Blood at the New Beverly. Really fun time. I saw Night of the Hunter, finally.
Really? Oh, did you?
Okay, unpopular opinion. I didn't like it that much.
No.
Yeah. Really? I really didn't. Like,
did you see it in the theater?
No, I just watched it at home. Because I wanted to watch something. Whenever I'm like kind of tired, I like to watch like movies from the 50s generally, or like 40s, 50s, like that kind of like old Hollywood-y. Like, I like that when I'm kind of tired, because they're usually short and they're usually pretty surface level. So I wanted to watch this, and I watched it. And yeah, I mean, Robert Mitchum gives a good performance, but I just think that it's so bloated. Like, it's like the kids are awful, and I just couldn't get past it.
Awful actors?
Awful. With the music and their face. their jaws dropping, and I'm like, oh my God. And then at one point they're in a boat and the little girl who's only like 3 years old and can barely speak starts singing like a song, like a full-on soprano, and she's singing perfectly. Well, and I'm just like, okay, no. But Lillian Gish is in it, yes. And she is fantastic. Favorite part of the movie was when they were with her.
She's the old woman they go and stay with.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Really? But see, it's impressionistic. It's a fairy tale.
I liked it. Okay, I take that back. I go, I didn't like it. I did like it, but I don't think it's this like masterpiece that everyone told me it was.
Oh, I have to disagree with you there. I do think it's a masterpiece.
Why? It's so corny, like actually corny.
It's turned up right to 11. It is kind of operatic, but it's this beautiful nightmare on film. I love that movie.
Like the moments when he's like singing, and I do like those impressionistic moments. You see him in the distance and he's like riding a horse, but it's kind of anticlimactic. Like, what happened? Lillian Gish shoots him and then he hides in the barn.
Spoilers.
I don't know. It just didn't click.
That's fair.
I thought it was really bloated and corny.
Isn't it like 90 minutes long, or is it longer?
When I say bloated, I mean just too much. Like, I guess melodramatic, but
right.
Not in a. And then,
too big.
Exactly. And like the part where the little boy is telling his sister a story, and then the shadow, Robert Mitchum, comes on with the hat, and she's like,
it's like urban German expressionism. It's like rural expressionism.
It didn't work for you? No, it didn't work. The kids are just too horrible.
Oh, I don't. It's been a few years since I've seen it.
Their jaws drop. Like, they just stare straight at the camera, and their jaw just drops.
It's heightened. It's a fairy tale. That's fair. If it didn't work for you, it didn't work for you.
I don't know. I think I used to be like that with melodramas and these 50s movies. I used to say, like, okay, whatever. Like, it was the 50s. It was different. But there's no excuse, because we've been watching great movies on this list that are older and don't do that. Like,
what about The Cirque we did?
Yeah, not as bad.
Yeah. Well, it's a whole different genre, but yeah.
I don't know. It just didn't really do it for me. And then I saw, not a movie, but I saw Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at the Geffen, and it was 3 hours and 20 minutes long,
including
two 10-minute intermissions, and you leave that place and you are exhausted. You are just drained of all life and emotion, and it's really good. The ending had me crying. I mean, I'd seen the movie, but seeing it live is really powerful. It's great.
God. Edward Albee, right?
Yes.
God. I've only seen the film, but...
You should go see it. It's a great time at the theater. Yes. Yeah, it's a great time. It's a great play. And the Geffen is so lovely. If you haven't been to the Geffen, it's in Westwood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's right across from school. Yeah. UCLA. But, yeah. If you want a really good night at the theater and you're in LA, I would go see it because it's great.
How long is it there for?
I don't know.
Wow.
I'm sorry. But I think it's time to get into this week's movie.
I think it is too.
Number 12 on the list, this is La Talente. La Talente was released in 1934. It was directed by Jean Vigo, written by Vigo and Albert Riera. Cinematography by Boris Kaufman, who, if you remember, is the brother of Ziga Vertov. Did you remember that?
I actually forgot.
There you go. He's not his collaborator from...
Man with a Movie Camera.
Yeah, I forgot his name.
Well, it was several episodes.
But it was their other brother. A French village girl, Juliette, marries Jean, the skipper of a canal barge called La Talente, and the two start their lives together cruising down the Seine, turning his business trip into their makeshift honeymoon. They are joined on the ship by the first mate, La Père Jules, and a cabin boy known simply as The Boy. The googly-eyed newlyweds make it to Paris, excited to explore the city. However, they are unable to go to shore as Jean cannot leave the boat unattended. They try to enjoy a dance hall the next day, but are interrupted by a flirtatious peddler, and a jealous Jean loses his temper. Angry at his oppressive behavior, Juliette disembarks the ship and decides to explore Paris solo. A heartbroken Jean decides to leave her behind, moving on to the next port. Separated and depressed, the two are eventually reunited when the first mate makes it his mission to find Juliette, and the reunited couple continue their literal and hypothetical journey down the river. The film stars Dita Parlo as Juliette, Jean d'Asté as Jean, and Michel Simon as La Père Jules. The film was shot both on location using a real leased barge, as well as at Gaumont Studios with a replica, and all the interiors were shot at the studio. And unfortunately, Jean Vigo suffered from bad health all his life. And he was suffering from tuberculosis when he was shooting the movie. But his health got worse and worse as production progressed. And he died shortly after the Paris release.
Yeah, he was like 29 or something.
Yeah, really unfortunate. And the film was not well received. In fact, the studio showed the first cut to distributors who were besides themselves. Like, they were so mad. They're like, it's all over the place. There's no commercial prospect at all. It's convoluted. They cut it down to 65 minutes. They renamed it The Passing Barge. They added like a popular song to the film, and it still bombed at the box office. And Vigo died thinking his movie was a failure.
It's like the most heartbreaking thing.
I know. But it was re-released after World War II, and it was really embraced by New Wave directors, particularly Truffaut, who loves Jean Vigo. And it's been restored to his original vision. I think in 2001, there was a final re-edit, which was done with his daughter to restore the film to what Vigo intended. And yeah, had a big influence on New Wave directors and Truffaut.
Yeah, and you can tell. It's all over the movie.
Yeah.
It does feel very ahead of its time. We say that for so many of these movies.
But come on!
But it does. 1934, it's like, wow. Okay, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
This was his only feature film.
Yeah.
Who wants to talk initial thoughts first?
Why don't you go first?
Why?
Oh, I don't know.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. In a word.
Because.
In a word, charming. I allowed myself to be charmed by this movie, and I actually loved it.
Oh, nice.
And I know you disagree, but I do. I think it is, it's unconventional and it's wonderful. You're looking at me and you're just...
There's no expression on my face.
I was
right
really
now.
Impressed by the montages. It has these great montages that almost feel like a silent film.
Yeah.
It turns into, it's this weird thing. It's like, it's a talkie that wanted to pay homage to like silent films. And people compare it to Sunrise, Song of Two Humans all the time. I honestly saw a little bit of Man with a Movie Camera. I know Boris Kaufman didn't work on that movie, but I definitely see a little bit of it in it. And I thought it was delightful. I don't know. Yeah, those little silent film montages were really sweet. Like the first night on the boat, there's another when they go to the dance hall, when she leaves the boat, when she goes to Paris. I just thought it was lovely. And I think chemistry-wise, we talk about this all the time. I think chemistry was really great. I instantly bought them. Well, we'll talk about it later, but I did... They did very much seem like this young couple in love, and it was kind of sweet, but also there's some weird stuff, but we will talk about them further.
Let's sweep it under the rug.
What are your initial thoughts?
First off, I want to say I was mistaken at the end of the last episode. I said, come back, join us for this film because it's an hour long, and it's 90 minutes.
It's so a 90-minute movie.
Sorry if I deceived you. It was not purposeful. Yeah, I don't know. This was my first time seeing this, and I heard about it for a long time. You know, it's funny, actually. I don't fall asleep during many movies, but I think like 5 years ago, I tried to watch this, and I saw the first like 20 minutes, and I fell asleep. Well, what happens with me, I don't allow myself to fall asleep during a movie. Like,
you'll
when
just stop it.
I'll stop the
me
movie.
Me too.
So that's what I did, and I never picked it back up.
Yeah.
Look, I don't dislike the film. I think that the movie has a lot of merit, and I think it is ahead of its time. And I absolutely see the influence on the French New Wave. And I've seen his shorts. I've seen, most because there's a Criterion release of his that I got years ago. It's funny, I'm just now getting around to this film, but I'd seen his shorts and they're okay. Nothing about his films like particularly draws me in, but this movie was a little bit of a slog for me, actually. And I'm trying to put my finger on exactly what it was, because it's a simple story and there's a lot of emotion in it, right? It's kind of brimming with this fiery romance of this, like, they're fighting and then they're longing for each other.
As Per Jules says, they're either fighting or kissing.
Exactly. And I like how kind of risque this movie was for the
time. Very risque. It's very erotic.
Do you remember the line when they walk into that nightclub?
Oh, the Duchess's pussy? Yeah. Yes, I remember.
The biscuits being as dry.
Yeah.
Holy shit. But then also, yeah, there's a lot of just, you know, the kissing in this movie is very un-Jimmy Stewart-y.
Not at all. Like, she's biting his ear. Kissing. Yeah. Jimmy Stewart is neck kissing.
Yeah, but Jimmy Stewart just like mashes his face into someone else. All love to Jimmy Stewart.
We love him.
Yes. But again, it wasn't Jimmy Stewart's fault. It was the code. This is pre-code.
I'm so glad this movie is French. Yes.
It's
French.
Yeah, exactly. So there was no code. But there's something about this that just doesn't quite work for me. And I think it did need to be shorter. I don't think it needed to be an hour long. Well, maybe it did. I don't know. I think there's too much with like Per Jules.
Maybe because it takes a kind of turn. I think it made it kind of seem like he was going to be this central character, mm-hmm. and he is for a little bit. But then they get off when they go to that dance hall, and he kind of like disappears. So it's like it did seem like, why did you use him so much if he kind of just
insignificant?
His greatest use is just that he like brings her back.
I felt like I got to know him more than I got to know either of them.
Exactly. He talks the most out of all of them. Yeah. And I don't know if that was like a style thing where it was like kind of he wanted them to be this kind of like silent film couple a little bit. And he's doing most of the talking.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't think it's perfect. And I don't think it's...
I think there are a lot of weird jumps in time, too. And I get that sort of a new wave thing. But there'd be a cut and you'd be like, wait, it would just be really disorienting, where I don't think that was the movie's intention.
Yeah.
Of like, wait, where are we now? And like, what, how many days have passed? And
yeah,
some sort of unnecessarily confusing things like that.
The only time I was confused is the beginning part. Like, I didn't realize, first of all, I didn't realize that skipper meant captain. Oh, I thought skipper was like a lowly position.
Oh, really?
I swear. I don't know why. So I was very confused. I was like, why are they calling him skipper?
But you never watched Gilligan's Island?
No, no. And I thought like the skippers on Jungle Cruise, this is our second episode in a row. Wow. It's like a river going down.
It's all connected.
It is. But yeah, so that was a little confusing. I didn't understand. I didn't know when it started and they got married. I didn't know anything about this movie. I didn't know that he was a ship captain.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, the movie doesn't spell it out in the beginning. You're kind of like...
So I was confused, though, because then you just see him on the ship and he's saying bye. I didn't realize that was the groom. I didn't.
Right.
But yeah.
Not saying that the film has to make those things clear early on. But it is kind of disorienting. It's like a disorienting effect of like, wait, who are they? What's going on here? Like, what's the purpose of this? It took me a while to figure out I thought the movie was just like a couple on their honeymoon, like taking a cruise. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, he's working and this is his boat. And like, I don't know. I'll go back to it at some point, but... Initial thoughts are just, it was a little messy and a little kind of like not super engaging. And there was a certain point in their relationship where she leaves the boat and he makes a decision to leave without her. And at that point, I kind of stopped caring about anything he had to say or think because he literally leaves her at one of the ports.
Yeah.
And then he's like immediately longing for her and he grows this beard and it's like, get fucked. I don't know. You're an asshole.
He is kind of a dick.
She deserved to like prosper in Paris and get her own life and meet someone new.
But I do love the idea of this like village girl marrying someone who's going to kind of show her the world. But then he doesn't really.
Yeah, he keeps her on the boat.
Yeah. But it is a journey. Like, I think that it's just about kind of like the rough start of a marriage. I don't know.
Yeah, because who knows how long they've known each other before this?
That's true. Who knows if they're going to last?
Right.
But
No, I was just going to say I like the idea of the movie more than the movie itself. In fact, I did read I'll just say that my Pauline, we're going to get to Pauline later. Pauline liked it more than I did, but there's something she said that I very much identify with.
I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
But let's talk about Viggo a little bit because I didn't know anything about him. I really didn't until yesterday. But this is his only feature. He became very popular after making a short film called Zéro de Conduit, which is like about, it means zero for conduct, but it is about this group of rebellious boys at a boarding school. And it was really influential for 400 Blows.
And it was also remade as If with Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah. And it is, is it really?
Mm-hmm.
That's so funny. We were talking about that before this episode.
We were.
That is so funny. But it was banned in France until 1945 because of how it represented the school system.
Yeah.
So he is the son of this anarchist. And he literally is just this like stick it to the man type guy. And I love that this film is like a great example of a director who took the meal ticket. Like he made this romance, but it is unconventional. Like barge people are not conventional members of society.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he did decide to make like the popular movie, but did this with it, he wanted to. So when he had the opportunity, when his producer came to him and said, now we can make a feature, he wanted to make it about a French anarchist. And then they're like, well, like, you know, your last movie is still banned. So maybe we should make a romance. And then this is what he did with the romance. And it's these unconventional people, this unconventional relationship. And I really like that.
I like that too.
And the song, it's so funny. The song that showman, that like peddler or whatever, is singing to them. It's called The Peddler's Complaint. And he wrote that himself.
Oh, really?
Yes, he wrote it himself as a satire of the type of songs the studios wanted in these types of films.
Oh, I didn't
know that.
So
it's like he's like that very rebellious guy. And I really do like that.
Ça sent si bon la naphtaline. Oh, mon amour de quatre sous. Je vends des peignes pour les poux et des dentelles pour l'épouse. Des cartes postales bleues et roses. Regardez ce que je vends, on ne fait jamais rien pour la vue. J'ai des baleines, des éléphants, des châteaux neige pour vos enfants. C'est moi le camelot de la rue.
Coucou! Kind of shares a lot with Louis Buñuel, I think.
Yeah, and Truffaut said, I watched this video on the Criterion channel of Truffaut and Romare talking about this movie. And he said that he called Viggo the first professional avant-garde French director. Like the first one to actually do it as a profession and like bring in his avant-gardeness in like this. Unfortunately, this was his only chance to do it, but to bring it in this popular space.
Yeah.
Well, which I think is really cool.
Let's talk about some of those flourishes because there are some really, really stunning moments in this movie.
Yes.
One of the first ones that comes to mind is when, you know, he lets her go. She gets off in Paris and he leaves like an asshole and, you know, grows a beard and jumps into the water. Does this weird water sort of thing where she's superimposed in the water. And
yes. So she tells him, she says, you know, dunk your head in the water. This is early in the movie. Like you see the one you love when you're underwater. Because I think he dunks his head and she's like, oh, why were your eyes closed?
Yep.
And he's like, what do you mean? And she's like, no, keep your eyes open. You see the one you love. And so throughout the movie, he keeps kind of teasing her and like trying to do it and it doesn't work. And then finally, when she leaves, he jumps in. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's a great moment.
I love it. But there's other great moments too. Like, I love, there's this beautiful shot of him running on the beach. It's after he's jumped in, right? It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's just him running like for miles.
Maybe a little 400 Blows.
Definitely. Oh, definitely. Definitely. And then there's this beautiful when Père Jules is showing Juliet his like trinkets.
I love that scene.
Great scene and great long shot. Do you know what I'm talking about? It starts from like right after he's played with his puppet. And then it continues all the way to when he cuts himself. And it's just this shot of like kind of above their heads. It's just this really long, beautiful shot that continues. And you don't realize until you're halfway in it that it hasn't cut.
Sure.
And it's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love that whole
thing. Then a cat pops up out of nowhere. She literally pulls one up. She's like, what? These cats?
Well, the movie is brimming with cats.
Let's talk about the cats.
That's his thing. That's Père Jules' thing.
He has all these stray cats.
And they're all over the place. They're giving birth to other kittens. They're just running amok. The guy, the husband, the skipper, when he first meets him, is like, oh, throw him overboard. Like a fucking asshole.
He's kind of an asshole.
He's trash. But yeah, there's cats. Like, this has to be the most amount of cats in any movie that's not about cats. Like,
yes.
Right? Like, have you ever seen this many cats in a movie? Oh my God,
I love the shot of the cats on the phonograph. They're all like listening to the music. Oh, yeah. One of them is sitting in the horn. It's so great.
The cats were a big plus for me. I'm a big cat lover. You know, what's interesting too, they're nice to the cats. Because the whole time, when you see animals in an old film, especially, you know, you're just like, oh shit, like what's going to happen to these animals? Like, are they going to get hurt? And yeah, there are a couple, they get thrown in this movie a couple times where you're like,
but they land on their feet.
Cats do land on their feet. So let's hope that they were all okay. But in general, the movie has a very positive attitude towards the cats. And Père Jules loves these cats. And he's like really doting cute on them. And
yeah,
I love that.
So Michel Simon, who plays Père Jules, adopted one of the cats after the
only
film.
One?
I think so. But he was a big animal lover. Like, he was actually, yeah.
Good.
But yeah, I mean, talking about these flourishes, these kind of making it unconventional, I think it does have a lot to do with like their chemistry and their like the sex in this movie. There's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And it's unabashedly like affectionate, which I love because I feel like you don't see that in an old movie. Like, she's pulling his hair.
Yeah.
Even when they're just messing with each other, they're very touchy. And then one of the great moments is like they start kissing and instead of like a tilt up, they just walk into the camera and that's the cut so you don't see them having sex. Yep. Like, they just walk into it and it's so much cooler than a tilt up.
It is.
It really is. Yeah. And then what about that POV shot where like the next morning after she's just woken up, he's literally crawling to her.
Oh yeah.
It's so weird. It really is.
I love all that stuff. I really do.
And then when they're kissing and like, are they singing to each other? It's that same morning.
Yes.
It's cute. It's very sweet. Yeah. And then, okay, what about the part where they're separated and then they start, it's night, it's intercutting between the two of them getting ready for bed, which I love, and they're separated. And then they start kind of like touching themselves.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit. We're
going to talk. Oh, it's your favorite side. It's great.
You actually sound like such a pervert, but yes.
No, I didn't. I think that is wonderful.
What about the scene where like she ties his leash to like the pole and like doesn't let him out or doesn't let him off the leash? Like, that was that when? Took it to a whole new level.
When
he has the collar on around his neck?
There was no collar in the movie I watched.
Just kidding. I'm kidding.
Are you serious?
You know what? There's an interesting, first of all, this came to mind, and I know we're both big Mad Men fans, but this whole episode, I wonder if this inspired the Mad Men episode where maybe you remember Don and Megan come to California and they go to a Howard Johnson and she won't try like the orange sherbet or something. And so Don leaves Megan at the Howard Johnson and like drives off like in a rage.
Yeah.
And then comes back for her and she's gone.
Yeah.
And he's like calling around.
Yeah.
I wonder if this was, it must be the inspiration
maybe
for that.
Maybe.
That's a great episode.
Maybe. I mean, that all that being said and their relationship and like being super affectionate, I mean, he is obviously super possessive and hits her.
Hits her.
But
yes.
Yeah, I know.
But this is a different time.
No, I mean, I don't even want to say that. I think it's annoying, first of all.
Is that blue collar barge life?
Yeah, I mean, it is 1934 for you, but do you think he learned his lesson?
No.
I don't know either.
No, I think him growing that beard and being depressed is like him being like, where's my property? I want my property back. I don't know. I hated him, to be honest.
Okay, but then when she returns and they start kissing and they fall on the floor.
Well, sure.
That was really, like, here's the thing. Yes, I'm torn. I think I'm very torn because their kind of relationship, the way it's depicted on screen, I love it. And I think it's beautiful, except the parts where he's a dick.
Which so
it's
is like, most I need of the to, movie.
Is it though?
Like, it's only great when they're like being passionate.
I love when the cats scratch him and then he like he takes her in her in his arms and she's like touching him, just touching his face and like kissing him. And
also, can I just say a cat would never do that? Also, the cats can sense what a POS he is.
Also, yeah, he kind of, I mean, okay, that's why I was confused, because it seemed like she was the bride and he was like a ship hand who was trying to like get at her, and that's why she was mad and ran away. But I think she just didn't want to have sex on the deck.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like now I'm torn up a little bit. I do think it's beautiful. And I think, like I said, I think their relationship is depicted very beautifully. But obviously, well, yeah. It is 1934. It is 1934. And he is kind of a piece of shit. So that is something that
kind of
anyone who loves film has to struggle with, I feel like.
Well, here's the thing, too. Oh, sorry, not to cut you off. Yeah. I just want to say briefly that, like, just because there's a piece of shit character in the movie, again, I don't think that Jean Vigo is endorsing this behavior.
I'm not saying that. Yeah.
I'm not like disliking it. Not that I dislike the movie, but I'm not being hard on it because he's a piece of shit.
Yes.
Like, I just think that if it is supposed to be this sweet romantic movie, that
it's not though.
It's not viable. And I think,
but I don't think it's, I feel nothing for him.
I think
that's fair.
Yeah.
That's totally fair. But I don't think it's supposed to be this sweet movie because it is about their struggle. Essentially it is. I mean, that song that they're singing, the lyrics start, so this is the song when she wakes up the first morning on the boat. They go, oh, let's wake her up with a song. And the song is, this is what they're singing. They say, here on the barge, it's not all fun. We sweat and toil. Here on the canal, it's no holiday. We're here to sail. And that's marriage, right? That's their relationship. And that's the song that she plays in that, what is it called? Palais de Chanson? Like that weird music hall thing where how Père Jules eventually finds her in town. She goes to this hall where you can listen to music and she plays that song on the speaker and that's how Père Jules finds her.
Yeah,
which is
that.
Sweet.
That's how
Disneylandy was that Palais.
We could not get through an episode without mentioning Disneyland.
But I saw that. Disneyland. I saw that Palais de Chanson and I'm like, Greg's gonna love that. It's Disneyland.
I love all the, I'm such a sucker. Like, I love that stuff and I love when Père Jules is showing her all his
that's
mechanical
my favorite scene.
Wind up toys. That's my favorite scene.
Let's talk about him a little bit. So what I love Père about Jules? Him, yes.
Yeah, because he's more interesting.
It's true that it's a weird move to make them more symbolic and make Père Jules more human and more natural.
Yes.
It is a weird move.
Yes.
Definitely.
Exactly. That throws me off.
Definitely.
Because
it's a weird move.
Père Jules is someone out of like a neorealist film.
Yes.
In terms of like, that's a real blood and bones
person. Yes. Whereas the couple is more of this like idea
symbolic.
Of a couple.
Yeah.
Yes. I do think that's weird. But at the same time, I love him.
I love him. Yeah, he's great. He's enchanting.
I love how he doesn't cause that much of a riff. Like, he never tries to get rid of her. That's such a trope of like, oh, my best friend has a new girl. I'm going to try and get rid of her. Like, he never tries to do that. He's literally just an observer.
He's like a little sleazy with her, though.
He's
like, oh, she's in her nightgown. And then like,
he was like, he just said the missus is in her nightgown.
I guess he's jovial, but he's getting to a line that was kind of creepy.
Do you think?
Yeah,
I actually didn't get that vibe.
Like when she's sewing, I don't know.
When she's sewing.
Yeah, and then he's like, scoot over and he shows her that he knows how to sew and then he gets up and he's just making, I don't know. I just got the
Here's
feeling
the
he
thing.
Was starting to.
Here's the thing. He is, and this is why I love him. He is genuinely rough around the edges.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not just one of those like characters who's like, I feel like there's this like archetype of a rough sailor who's like low-key hot but rough around the edges, like he has like
hot,
yeah, they always try to make him low-key hot, but he has like dirty fingernails and he like had a past love that died and that's why he's such an asshole,
although he did break a lot of hearts.
Exactly. That's why I like him. That's why I like Père Jules, is because he is actually weird. Like, he's actually
he's
kind of a
weirdo.
Yeah.
What about the scene where he goes to the fortune teller?
Oh yeah.
And the fortune teller prostitutes herself.
He has hands. He has his friend's hands in a jar.
Oh, yeah.
He's unapologetically weird. Yeah. And he doesn't change his character for you to like him. He stays the same the whole time. He doesn't grow really affectionate towards her or starts doing like little favors for her. You know, like nothing changes. It's just you see more angles of him throughout the movie.
Yeah.
It's so funny, but that is my favorite scene when he's showing her all that stuff.
I love that scene.
So great. I'm such a sucker for like antique stores
and old wind up toys, old mechanical toys and stuff. There was a couple good gags in this. One of them was the one with the record. So when the one where he's playing the record with his finger.
Yes, and he goes, weirder things have happened.
The boy is playing the accordion to make it sound like the record's playing.
Yeah.
That was a great gag.
And he freaks out. He's like, he genuinely believes it for a second, and then he realizes the boy is fucking with him.
Yeah.
And he goes, what weirder things have happened than playing a record with your finger? Can you explain the wireless? Like, it's so funny.
Yeah.
He goes to get his hair cut from like a dog.
Even the dog groomer is like, whoa, that guy was a weirdo.
And then
Oh, no. There's a great scene, too, where the husband, the skipper, goes overboard. I forget his name.
Jean.
He's trash. I'm not even going to say his name. He goes overboard. And then they're like looking, Père Jules and what's the wife's name?
Juliet.
They're both looking overboard. Mm-hmm. And then he comes up from behind them. Jean comes up from behind them and looks over with them. And then they turn around and see him. Remember this scene in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade where they go over the cliff. I think he's in a tank. Yeah, Indy is in a tank. And it looks like Indy has just died. And then Sean Connery and Denholm Elliott and I think John Rhys-Davies look over the cliff as in, oh, Indiana Jones has just died. And then Harrison Ford comes up from behind them and also looks down.
Yeah.
And that must be, it must be a reference to this.
Yeah, definitely. I also love, there's this great thing I've noticed I like, and I feel like it is very new wavey. I've seen it, I feel like, in a lot of new wave movies. The moment where he's telling her, I think they're like in bed, and he goes, it's okay, like tomorrow we'll go to the Four Nations, which is like the dance hall, and we'll have a good time. And it's like, while he's saying that, you already are seeing the Four Nations, you're seeing the dock by it, and it's voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Nice touch.
It was a really nice touch.
I love all that stuff in this.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
here's what, I think we hit the nail on the head. It is weird that they are a very symbolic couple and Père Jules is this really fully fledged out human.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
And I think it's also just like, it just felt a little rough around the edges. And I know it's an early sound film. And I know you talked earlier about like, oh, it's like a kind of an homage to silent film. But also some of these early sound films are awkward because they don't quite know how to use sound yet and stuff. It kind of just felt like, I don't know. I wanted to be more into this. And this is one I'll definitely come back to, hopefully before too long, because I do think that there was enough interesting stuff here. And again, I don't dislike the movie. But number 12 on the Sight and Sound list seems a little high. And again, I recognize its influence on generations of filmmakers. But, you know, again, I think that this leads us to the debate of, like, should a movie be on the list strictly because it's influential? Or should the movie still have a lot of merit on its own?
Yeah.
But I seem to be in the minority here. Even looking at Letterboxd reviews, most people love this movie.
I actually loved it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm in the minority. I don't know.
I think that if I saw this in 1934, I think this and Passion of Joan of Arc would be my favorite movies.
Oh, my God. Well, if I saw this in 34, I would have been completely blown away.
Exactly. I like to think about it like that. I really do. But you're totally right. This kind of unsolvable problem, right, is whether or not it should, how these movies on the list should be judged.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no answer. I really don't know. Maybe if we were critics, we would have a better answer.
We are critics.
No, like actual critics.
We are actual critics.
But I don't know. I think this movie's charming.
Yeah, that's fair.
Can we talk about the title a little bit? Because I was a little confused. I looked it up. So, Atalante is Atalanta in English, who is a figure in Greek mythology.
Oh.
And she was this kind of original badass woman in mythology, one of the original, like, tough woman, female characters. And she was this huntress and athlete who would beat men in all of these games, like races and hunts, and she would just, like, beat them all the time. She was better. And her name, like her literal, the literal meaning of her name means equal in weight, which is kind of a reference to that. She's equal to them. So I just thought that was That's really cool, interesting. Yeah.
Because, I didn't know that at all. Yeah.
I mean, what is it saying about their relationship, their marriage? It's.
The name of the boat has to mean something.
Exactly.
If this is a film worth its weight, it can't just be
and
like...
And I love... Yeah.
Which is why the retitling of the
exactly.
film...
Exactly. Yeah. I was just going to say that. He named it that on purpose.
Yeah.
The retitling... What was it? Passing barge?
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know. Part of me, though, wants to see an hour-long cut of this movie. To be completely
the
honest.
The 64-minute one?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that the name has some... weight to it.
Yeah,
about this power struggle.
I like that.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Should we do favorite sight and sound?
Let's do it. I'll go first.
Listen, go for
it. I'm taking charge here now. It's funny. So I'm looking at my notes. I actually had like four, and then one would come up that I liked more.
For sound or sight?
For sight. So like I had one
exactly.
And then
there's
something,
a lot.
Then something
a
later
lot.
Would happen. I'm like, oh no, I like that more. And then I would write that one. And then I'm like, oh no, I like this more. Anyway, I settled on. It is the pervert scene. It's the scene where they're dreaming about each other in bed and kind of touching themselves because it was effective.
Yes.
And it's these like slow cross dissolves and they're both kind of like, you know, it's like an overhead shot of them in bed. Yeah. It just, yeah. It was,
he's like kissing his own arm and she's touching her own breast and the music is... wonderful. And then there's these shots of them like slow turning around and it'll dissolve in the other one. I thought that that was incredible.
Yeah, I was stunned by that.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
How about you?
So it was that. It was the cats on the phonograph. Mm-hmm. It was obviously the beautiful scenes in water. But if I'm going to be annoying, my actual one, if I had to pin it down like and be different, there's this shot. Where, it, again, it's one of those silent montages. It's when she's going into the city. So she's on this streetcar. And it's the second she gets off the streetcar. Or maybe it happens right before. Second, or right before, or right after she gets off the streetcar. It cuts to an image of their empty bed. Of her, like,
oh, yeah.
having left the bed unmade.
Uh-huh.
And it's so good. Yeah, I love I remember that. I loved that.
Yeah, some really good stuff in this.
See? What's your favorite sound?
Sound. It's literally just him. Okay. There's two. I'm not gonna play the first one because it's just dialogue, so I can just say it. But
okay.
it's when they come in and they first see that this cat has given birth on what's his name?
Jean?
Yeah. No.
Père Jules?
Père Jules' bed.
Yeah.
The cat's given birth and there's like some kittens there. And John makes a comment about like throwing them off the side. But before that, Père Jules says, I'm not the father, you know. It was great. And that,
he's got some good lines.
I instantly liked him after that line. But
yeah.
Really my favorite sound is just Père Jules setting off all those cool wind-up toys and like all the cool music boxes and stuff.
Okay, how creepy is that puppet?
I don't think it's creepy. I like old weird stuff
no,
like that.
It's creepy. Really weird.
I don't know. It takes a lot to creep me out. Are you like creeped out by old dolls and stuff?
Not particularly. Like there's some people who are like terrified, right? But not really. But
so,
this guy's weird.
When I was growing up, there was a house two doors down. It was all pink. For as long as I could remember, and this old woman lived there, and we just
sounds
called
like a bad recipe.
We called her the Pink Lady because she lived in a pink house. And literally, I went inside this house once or twice after she passed away, because when she passed away, she gave the house to the neighbors next door because she didn't have any immediate family, I guess. And the neighbors kept her house in the same state, like
oh my God.
They kept all of her stuff up and everything as if she was still alive. And I went in once when I was a kid, and it was just. All these creepy dolls sitting on the couch. Like the couches were just filled with dolls on the table everywhere. And it was so
There's
creepy.
No way. Did you make this up?
No,
There's
I swear to God.
No way.
The Pink Lady. No, I swear to God.
That's crazy.
Yeah. If I made it up, I would have made something way more outrageous up than that.
You should write a story about this. I mean, it already sounds like a story or a movie.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway.
You could embellish it a bit.
Yeah. I mean, it was creepy,
add
but like...
some ghosts.
Yeah. Well, I am writing a ghost story.
There you go.
Anyway, what about you? What was your favorite sound?
My favorite sound is the music that leads into the scene of them touching themselves.
Oh, okay.
Slash the whole music.
Yeah.
Because it's beautiful.
Let's hear it.
It is these montages that feel very silent filmy. Like that one felt super modern because we just watched the whole transition into that scene where it's intercut of them two getting ready for bed. How modern did that feel?
It's when I see stuff like that, I'm like, did I misjudge this film? But I remember even thinking while I was watching, I'm like, wow, there's some stunning sequences in here. But overall, like as a whole, it just didn't quite do it for me.
Yeah.
But there's some stunning stuff in this movie. Yeah. Like this is absolutely worth watching if you're into film.
Yes. What does Pauline say?
Pauline. Okay. So she loves it, but she says something that I very much identify with. Jean Vigo, who died in his 20s, made only this one feature film, a sensuous poetic love story about a young barge captain on the Seine who marries and takes his bride with him. It's a wonderfully spontaneous, unarranged-looking film photographed by Boris Kaufman and with a lovely score by Maurice Jaubert. Mm-hmm. It's also a strange film, much slower and more consciously dreamlike than Vigo's short works. In some ways, it's more pleasurable in the memory than while you're seeing it. I completely agree.
Yet, when you just watched another clip right now, you actually just said, maybe I misjudged this.
I know, but it is one of those movies, and I feel like we've had a couple of these so far where, I watched it last night, and I wasn't super in the mood to watch it, and I started it, and like, you know, that always kind of like factors in. You'd like to think that you could just sit down and watch a great film anytime.
It's not true.
But
it's not true,
and I think, you know, where you are, what you've done that day, and what, you know, what temperature it is outside, like that all kind of affects, not that it was super hot last night, but all kind of affects the viewing experience. But anyway, I wasn't super in the mood to watch this last night. It did win me over in certain sequences, but yeah. But I think too, like there are so many films I started that I wasn't in the mood for that I hadn't seen before that completely won me over within 5 or 10 minutes.
It
and
is
I was just like,
yeah.
So, you know, it goes both ways.
It does. But, it does.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm being honest, complete honesty session.
Yeah.
I had like a really rough day yesterday and then I sat down to watch this at, God, what time is it? Maybe like 3 p.m. And I was so tired because I had been running around for the past 2 days that I did get really sleepy like 20 minutes in and I felt myself dozing off. So I did stop it and I took a half hour nap and then I started it
there
again.
You go. That's it. That's key, the half hour nap. Yeah.
That just felt appropriate to share.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh.
I agree. I'm sorry, 12 is really high.
I think it's funny too. Sorry, just for 1 second that we both fell asleep in this movie.
But it was, I don't think it was because of the movie. I had just been having a rough day, but.
No, we both do.
11, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 12.
12 is high.
It's very high.
And yeah. I wonder if it's because maybe a lot of the critics voting on this list are French and are very new wave-esque.
Well, it's a very revered film.
It is, and I do love it, and I, like I said, I think if I saw this in 1934, it would be my favorite movie.
Unless, here, we'd like to think that it would be, but what if in 1934, you and I were just total simpletons, and like, this was so above our heads? I don't know. But no, I mean, if you were into this kind of thing, if you were into art, and like cinema and stuff, and you saw this when it came out, yeah, this would be like revelatory.
Truffaut said he saw it when he was like 16 or 17, and it completely changed him, yeah.
I bet. Yeah, should we do Letterboxd?
Let's do it. I discovered a new feature where you can sort the reviews by lowest rating first.
Wait.
And I wish I didn't.
Don't tell me you just now found it. That's what I've been using this whole time.
I don't like it, though, because then I just went down a rabbit hole of horrible reviews. And I like mixing it up, and I like...
Yeah.
Sometimes people that give high stars have really funny little, like, one-sentence ones, which I love.
I try to scour the low ratings, the high ratings, and by popularity. So I try to get, like, a, you know... I have one here with one star. Tried to power through. When compared to such vibrant, ingenious, emotional works contemporary to this, like Rules of the Game, Sunrise, Joan of Arc, why bother with something that, despite a few moments of beauty here and there, plays so stale? I kind of agree. And it's funny because we have done Rules of the Game, Sunrise, and Joan of Arc. That's on this so podcast funny. Already.
I like this way more than Rules of the Game. Way more.
I don't know about that one for me.
In fact, I think I kind of like it more than Sunrise. I know you're going to kill me for that. You know what?
I feel like we should bring up Sunrise briefly just because a lot of people compare this to Sunrise. And
didn't we?
We said it very briefly, but so you prefer this to Sunrise. I prefer Sunrise.
I think I do. Yeah. I think I do because I think there is something about the fact of having two people that are so touchy with each other in a movie that's like kind of a silent film, but not really. Like with Sunrise, it's a completely different ball game, I think.
Sunrise is very fable-like.
Yes.
This is a little more real.
Grounded, yeah. It is. I think I like it more.
That's fair. I like Sunrise, but...
I'm trying to think why, though. I'm trying to give, like, a concise answer as to why.
For me, personally, I think Sunrise is just a better film-going experience than this.
Yes. It definitely has more action and more danger.
Whoa, that makes me sound like a total...
But it does. Come on.
Putz.
It does. It does have more action. It does have more danger. It has that really dramatic ending.
I think it's more cohesive.
I think that this is a little anticlimactic. I'll agree. But I also love... There's something beautiful about her playing that song and Perjul coming and finding her and like sweeping her up. And then everyone in that place is like, oh my God. You know, they all freak out. They're like, who's this guy abducting this girl?
Yeah.
Like, it did have these very... I love the moment everyone is leaving their wedding and there's this long procession of people and they're kind of gossiping a little bit. Like, I love that.
I like that they're talking about her before we meet her.
They're talking about her before they meet her, yeah. Before we meet her, and they're saying, like, of course she married someone that's not from the village. Like, she always had to be different.
Yeah,
and I love, I feel like that's Vigo. Like, I feel like that's him making this his own. And I love that about it. I think I like... You can tell that this was made by someone in their 20s who was in love. And I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, he, like, died in his wife's arms. And, like, while he was dying, someone... This is a big rumor. This is a big apparently. Apparently, like, as he was dying, someone on the street was playing... The popular song, I didn't write down the name, the song that they had put in the movie to make it more commercial.
Oh my God, so it's a slap in the face.
Something, and he thought that it was a failure. No. Like, all those aspects I think contribute to my love of the movie. I also do love the movie. I think that the sequences are beautiful, as we've mentioned. But, yes.
He died of tuberculosis, right?
Yeah, in the 30s. I feel like in the 30s, people were not dying of that anymore. Not as frequently.
Ratso Rizzo died of it in 1969, so it's still a thing.
Wait, Ratso from Midnight Cowboy?
Yeah, yeah.
For a second, I was like... Well, he refused to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
Anyway, where were we? Letterboxd?
Yeah, it's your turn.
My turn. 2.5 stars. Yet another movie where the cat is the most likable character. This should have been the cats.
It's true.
There are plural.
There's so many
cats.
It
is plural.
This one has 3.5 stars. So it's still, I think that's what I gave it, 3.5. This doesn't do much for me. There are scenes of beauty and a few beautifully poetic moments scattered throughout, but otherwise it just feels quite generic.
Wait, didn't we already read this?
The film has charming characters and sweet moments, but it just doesn't feel very distinctive or interesting. The pacing is good and the time passes quickly, so it doesn't ever feel boring. But beyond that, the film fails to excite me. I just wish Jean Vigo had lived longer to see what other potentially better films he could have created. Kind of agree.
1.5 stars. Was not impressed. Standard romance fare, but in French.
Yeah, 5 stars. Everything. So yeah, 5 stars. Everything Godard and Truffaut were going to do in the 60s ahead of time and right on schedule.
Nice. 2 stars. Lesson here is that people who live on boats are fucking weird.
Someone said 3.5 stars, revisited for a column that focuses on the multitude of cats. Surprised to find myself comparatively underwhelmed this time, which is their third viewing. It's a lovely film, but gossamer thin, with Michelle Simon stealing focus from the newlyweds so consistently that their clinch in the finale feels like an afterthought. Jean diving into the river to see Juliet's face has a lyrical force than nothing else. And with the possible exception of Juliet's initial walk across the barge can match, I kept thinking of how much more captivated I was by Renoir's A Day in the Country. And perhaps also by Sunrise. It's funny because Day in the Country is coming up.
Coming up, yeah.
In fact, that's next week.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Okay, this is my last one. And this is because I discovered the feature of rating the lowest ones first. That's why all of mine this week have been really like badly rated and just silly. 2 stars. I know I'm supposed to like this movie, but I did not. It was boring and uneven, and the old deckhand grossed me out. Grossed me out.
There's beauty there. Well, that was La Talante. Sean Vigo's first and only feature.
You know, I really do think that if he lived longer, it's sad. It seems like
he was really wasted.
It's a shame.
It is a shame.
What are we doing next week?
Next week, we're doing... I'm going to let you pronounce it.
Oh, my God. Oh.
It's A Day in the Country, but the French
Partie
title.
Partie de Campagne.
Yep, that's it. So this is another Jean Renoir. We did The Rules of the Game from Jean Renoir. This is our second one. This actually is... I'm not lying this time. This is a 40-minute film.
What's its 40. Number on the list?
It's another tied for 90.
Oh, okay.
It's the last tied for 90.
Nice.
And then after that, it goes down to 84.
Yeah, what the hell?
So yeah, this is legitimate. I'm serious this time. It's a 40-minute film, 4-0. So come on. You guys got 40 minutes. Let's dive into this.
I'm really excited. Yes.
Yeah.
Join us next week for A Day in the Country. And before then, check out our website.
Yeah.
We worked really hard on it.
We did. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears. No, in reality, many, many afternoons went into creating that website.
Yes, but it was fun. It was very fun.
Yeah,
it was a labor of love.
Yeah, labor of love. Check it out. You guys, if you want to get in touch with us, you know, we are hello@seenandheardpod.com. You could also get in touch with us on our website. Drop us a line, say hey, whatever, anything. You know, call us pretentious. Tell us how wrong we are about the film. Anything. And then also, if you could drop a rating wherever you're listening to this, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever, drop a rating, maybe write a review, a little something. If you're enjoying, you know, hey, no pressure.
Only if you're enjoying.
But yeah, that'll do it for this week. We'll see you guys back next week for another Jean Renoir.
Bye.
Bye. This has been an official podcast of the Arroyo Film Club. Seen and Heard is Jacqueline Pistagian and Greg Kleinschmidt. Theme music by Andrew Cox. You can find us at seenandheardpod.com.